Hey, happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Did you hear the good news? The tomb is empty. He's risen, just as he said. I'm so glad that being in church on Easter is important to you, and I'm grateful that you chose to come to Thunder Mountain Community Church. It's my prayer that every time we gather, for everyone who comes, it will be an opportunity for life-changing encounter with the living God. And so whatever it is that you need from God, I know he's got something special for you, and I pray that your time here will be a blessing. I want to tell you about the story of two real rescue missions. Imagine yourself at the top of this ridge. This picture is an image from a movie of the island of Okinawa. Those of you that are historical buffs, you'll say that's not really Okinawa, but it comes from a movie. And the reason Okinawa was important was because the United States and our allies needed to secure this land, we felt, in order to launch a planned invasion of the mainland in November. Thankfully, that didn't need to happen. But the battle for Okinawa raged on for weeks, and on this occasion, the unit that you were with was forced into a retreat, but you were left behind. You're lying there in the mud on that cold April day, lying in the mud, wounded, unable to move, unable to save yourself. You watch people scurry back down the ridge, back down to their camp, and you wonder, what's going to happen to me? Feeling alone and helpless, left for dead, you hear in the distance of voices of men shouting in a foreign language with random gunshots. You know what they're doing. The enemy's coming through looking for survivors and finishing them off. So on one hand, you're playing dead, hoping that you'll be able to escape the detection of the enemy. At the same time, you're aware, painfully aware, that you won't need to play it much longer before it becomes real. So you're wondering, what's going to happen to me? I can't save myself. How do I get out of this mess? And then at the same time, you feel like, why not just die here in the mud? But then you look out of the corner of your eye, and you see that there's one person who is able to get around. And he's going from body to body, checking for signs of life. Every once in a while, he checks and he drags someone off towards the ridge. And you figure, well, he's not going to come back. What a fool would he be? What a fool he is to be here at all, and yet to keep coming back. But he does, again, again, and again. And then he comes to you, and you feel his hand on your neck, checking for your pulse. He whispers to you, and you turn, and you look, and you recognize him. It's the man from basic training that we called Coward, and he has come to save you. Look at this clip from Hacksaw Ridge of the man that was on that ridge to save lives. Imagine the lunacy of a man who would risk his life to save those who had treated him that way. Who wouldn't have just taken the opportunity to scurry back down the ridge? Who would have remained to save those who had done that to him? And here he is at your side. You're wounded. You're questioning whether you're worth saving. What makes me worth saving? What makes my life worth him risking his? The one that everyone had looked down on, whose faith no one understood, whose convictions were not only questioned, but they were condemned. And now he's the one who remains on the ridge, and he's the one who is at your side, calling you to go with him to safety. You had tried to convince him. You had tried hard to convince him to give up his dream, his mission to save lives, but he endured, and at this moment, you're so glad that he did. You tried to get him to quit, and he had an out. He could have taken it, and now you're glad that he didn't. And the one that you called Coward Doss is the one who stayed in the fight to save your body. Now, watch how he worked through the night to save you and many others. Watch him as he struggles to hear God and to live out his faith in a very difficult situation. How do you know what someone believes? Faith, many feel, is a way to think. My faith is the way that I think. Some think that their faith is the way that they talk. But the only way to really tell what you and I believe is what we do. What we believe is lived out in what we do. And what causes some people to live out their faith running into danger and others run away? Private Doss was no coward. He was an authentic soldier. People didn't understand his faith. They didn't understand his conviction. Everyone knew his conviction to not carry a weapon, but they could not tell until he was tested in battle the strength of conviction on the inside, and that was a willingness to die for those who had mistreated him. He made it off the ridge, and he saved at least 75 men, maybe more, who would have died in the mud that day had it not been for his faith and his courage. And for his heroics, he won the Congressional Medal of Honor. He was awarded this, and the only person to receive it who never fired a shot. But Private Doss, who became Corporal Doss, he was an ordinary man who became great because of his heroics on the battlefield. What I'm going to tell you about today is another man, a man who was great, but became ordinary and so that he could save many more. He was a man who lived a long time ago. He was born to a young teenage peasant girl whose pregnancy was rumored to have been without a man. Few people believe that. His dad, the man who was proposed to be his dad, only married his mother reluctantly after the pregnancy was known. And during his short life, he said a lot of crazy things. He said things like, anyone who's looked at him has seen God. And people listened to that and they laughed. He claimed that he had been alive a long time before he was born. And people just thought he was crazy. And then he predicted that he would die, but within 3 days he would come back to life. People scoffed. Like Private Doss, he was doubted, he was ridiculed, he was mocked, and he was beaten too. But unlike Doss, he didn't make it off the ridge. He died on that ridge that day, just outside the city limits. The people who knew him wrote of his life, and what they wrote was compiled into a book that became the best-selling book in the history of mankind. You and I know that book as the Bible. And what they wrote about this person, here's what was written, that though he was God, and this was written by people who knew him, though he was God, he did not consider equality with God something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave, and he was born as a human being. And when he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Those who knew him said he was God, but he did not consider divine authority something to cling on to and hold on to. Instead, he let it go. He gave it up in order to become one of us and enter into our world as our rescuer. Our rescuer has a name, and I call my rescuer Jesus. Jesus came and he lived a life without sin and temptation. Every time sin and temptation presented itself, he went the other direction. Why? So that his life could fulfill the righteousness of God. Jesus died alone on the ridge at the hands of those he came to save. And then when he rose from the dead, he rose from the dead in order to conquer the previously undefeated enemies of sin and death. And when Jesus came as a rescuer, he didn't go around looking for signs of life in order to preserve life. Jesus came looking for those who were dead, looking for one more who was spiritually dead so that he could breathe into him his life. Now, I don't know where you are on your faith journey, but for me, the reason I put my faith in Jesus isn't very complicated, because I'm just a simple person. There are a lot of things I don't understand. There are a lot of things that go on in this world that I don't like, that I would change if I could. But there was one day that I remember sitting in a chair between 8th grade and 9th grade and hearing an invitation to accept Jesus' forgiveness for my sins. And I just sat there. It's like my rear was glued to the seat. I couldn't get up. But as soon as the invitation was over, suddenly the glue let go and I was able to get up and say, "Is it too late?" And they said, "No, it wasn't." And there I accepted Jesus. And you know, when Jesus said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except by me," I just chose to believe him. And when life gets hard and you take your knocks, and sometimes you even wonder, why did God allow this? Or you may even wonder if there is a God, since some of the things that happen. But yet, what I recognize, the questions I go to in those hard times, the thing that I believe I know that I know, comes down to this. Why was the tomb empty? If the tomb was empty because of a resurrection, what difference does it make? Well, here's the difference it makes to me. Because there are so many ideas about who God is and how we can know him and who can go to heaven and who can't, and whether there's another place called hell or not. You know, there's a lot of confusing things. A lot of people say a lot of things, and you may not know who to believe. And I'm going to tell you, my opinion's no better or worse than anybody else's. My opinion, your opinion, anybody else, no matter how many letters of degrees they have behind their name, one opinion's no better or worse than another person's opinion. What we really need and our only hope and desire is that God would speak. If there's a God, he needs to speak. We need to hear from him, because unless he speaks, we have no idea. But if God would speak, then only his opinion would count. Because otherwise, we just pool our ignorance. Who's been there to come back and really speak with authority? And that's where the resurrection comes in for me. Because I believe that if the tomb was empty because of a resurrection, then Jesus was who he claimed to be, which means that God has spoken. And only his opinion counts. And yet, I just want to just encourage you. I don't know where you are in your faith journey. I just want to ask you a question. Have you seen enough of God to be able to trust what you don't understand? Have you seen enough of God? And for me, it comes down to the tomb being empty. Because none of the other explanations, natural explanations, make any sense to me. I mean, the disciples stole the body. It's possible. You got to consider it. But when you consider that his disciples scattered and they were afraid and they locked themselves in a room because everything they expected Jesus to do and to be was just disintegrated before their eyes when he was killed. I mean, he was supposed to start a political revolt. He was supposed to raise Israel back up to power, and they were going to be there when it happened. None of that was possible when he was killed. And so they thought, well, we're losers. We better hide or we're next. So I don't think those men suddenly would have found the courage or the motivation to be able to leave that room to take on that legion of Roman soldiers who were given the penalty of death if they failed to guard the dead man's body. So I don't think the disciples stole the body. Others say the people just had hallucinations. Now, I don't know about you. If you lived through the 60s or any of the activities of the 60s, you know two people don't have the same hallucination. So we had people hallucinating who looked at each other, and did you just see what I saw? What did you see? I saw Jesus. What did you see? I saw Jesus. Jesus appeared to up to 500 people at the same time. And Paul said many of them, to the people that he wrote to, many of them are still alive. You can go ask them themselves what they saw. So I don't think it was an hallucination that satisfied the explanation of the appearances. Others say that he didn't really die, that he just swooned and he came back to life. Well, think about it. All that he went through, really? Medical people scoff at this. There's no one who could have lost that much blood and revived and had the ability to roll back a stone, fight off the soldiers, and disappear. He wouldn't have made it very far. And yet, at the same time, the Jewish burial custom was 75 pounds of spices strapped to your body. So none of those explanations make any sense to me. So at the end of the day, I believe the only explanation for why the tomb was empty was a resurrection. And to me, that means something. That means that Jesus was who he claimed to be, that God has spoken, and it doesn't matter what you or me or anybody else thinks, only God's opinion counts. And that includes everything that we don't understand and we don't agree with. There are things that have happened in my life that I don't understand and I wouldn't have chosen, except through them I've got to experience God as a gentle shepherd. And I've seen him keep his promises that if you love me and you serve my purposes, it doesn't matter what happens to you, Randy, it's all going to work for good. And it has, and it does. Things that I would not have chosen, but now I wouldn't give up. because I've experienced him in a way that is real and personal and better than anything I could have written for myself. Jesus came on a rescue mission. He came to a world that he had made, to people he had created, and he found rejection. And yet, the Bible says, to those who did receive him, to those who chose to believe in his name, he gave to them, he gave to many of us, the right to become children of God. A right that we're not born with, but that we are given when we choose to believe what we've seen and trust him with what we don't see. Faith is the conviction of things unseen. We talk sometimes from time to time the difference between opinions and convictions. Opinions are those things that there's always that point where pressure is too great. You say, forget that, it's not worth it. Convictions are different. Opinions come and go. Convictions stay to the death. What was it that changed about those disciples who were so cowardice and ran and fled and yet then decided to give their lives for this man? Something changed between after the crucifixion and the burial and the empty tomb. It was their own encounters with Jesus. Do you have a favorite apostle? You may not even be able to name one. Don't feel bad, because it's not like I can name more than three. I mean, maybe I could, but on the stage, you always get stage fright, and even pastors forget things. But I can name three right now. My favorite isn't Peter, who was named Simon, and Jesus renamed him Peter. I mean, imagine this. Your name is Simon, and Jesus says, your name is now going to be Peter, because on this rock, I'm going to build my church. I don't know what Simon meant. Maybe it meant mush. Your name is Mush, but now you're going to be Rock, and I'm going to build my church on you. Who wouldn't want to be that person? But Peter isn't the one. I mean, I like Peter because he says what he thinks, and then he looks stupid. I mean, one of my cardinal rules in life is it's better to be silent and thought a fool than open your mouth and remove any doubt. But I'm still like Peter many times. I remove doubts many too often. But Peter isn't my favorite. There's John. John was the one. I mean, get this. He referred to himself as the disciple that Jesus loved. Where did he get that? Well, maybe because there was a special relationship. He's on the inner circle. And when they had the Passover for the last time, he reclined at the table next to Jesus, right next to him. He was the only one that tradition says didn't die a martyr's death, but he was allowed to live and die as an old man on the island of Patmos, where God spoke to him, and he wrote the book of Revelation, the only book in the New Testament speaking of things to come. But John isn't the one, although there's some appeal to that. The one that I really like is named Thomas. Many of you know Thomas as his last name. Doubter is his first. Why is it that I would like Thomas? I'll tell you why. I think if he were alive today, he'd be an engineer. Maybe because my dad was an engineer, I see it in Thomas, and I like what I see in Thomas. Thomas was the one who had a hard time accepting what the others had said just based on hearsay. I mean, here Sunday came. They had been locked up in this room, and when Sunday came and the Passover was over, the guys remained there, and it was Mary Magdalene that went to the tomb. Maybe she concluded that, you know what? Her prior life as a woman of ill repute, one who had had demons cast out of her by Jesus. She thought, you know, life can't get any worse. And what more can they do to me? She went to the tomb not to look for anything other than to take care of the dead man's body because of her love for Jesus. When she got to the tomb, she found something she didn't expect. The soldiers were gone. The stone was rolled back. And there was now a vacancy sign over that motel. No, they didn't have signs in those days like that, but it was vacant. But what was her conclusion? She didn't say, hey, he rose just like he said. She ran back to the men whose knees were shaking in that room, and she said, guys, they've taken the Lord's body, and I don't know where they put him. Come help me. So Peter and John ran to the tomb. They looked inside, and they verified, you're right, he's gone. I don't know. They went back home. She was outside weeping, and then came a man, the gardener, she thought. And he called her by name, Mary. But she was so distraught, she didn't think this was odd the gardener would know my name. She just says, "Where did you put my Lord's body? Tell me so I can go get him." And then he called out her name again, Mary. And she looked up and said, "Rabboni." It was Jesus. There he was. He appeared to her first before anyone else. And then she went and told the others. And then over time, Jesus would appear to his followers. He stepped into that room. Thomas was absent. Because why was Thomas absent? I don't know. We can guess. Everything that he'd put his faith and hope in this man for was now shattered. So he thought, "Man, I wasted my time. I better get on with living my life." So the disciples found him and said, "Thomas, we've seen the Lord." He scoffed at them. "You're crazy. I saw him die. He's buried. There's no way. There's no way he's alive. It's impossible." He said, "But we've seen the Lord." And Thomas said, "Wait, unless I can put my fingers in his hands where those nails were driven and put my hand in his side where I know the spear was thrust and pulled back out, unless I can do that, I'm not going to believe that anyone that you see is Jesus." I said, "Whatever." Well, a week later, Thomas was with them. Why? Because I think every one of us, even though our own expectations get shattered, we still have this hope that what God said is true. And so he was with them this time. And this time, they're still in that room with the doors locked, and Jesus came in. And this time, he went to Thomas. He said, "Thomas, come here." Who would want to be Thomas at that moment? "Good night." I think that's why the doors were locked, so Thomas wouldn't run. Thomas came, and he said, and Jesus said, "Thomas, go ahead. I'll make your day. Go ahead. Put your finger here. Feel this for yourself. Oh, and this too? You want to feel that?" When Thomas examined the evidence, what did he do? I believe he fell to his knees when he cried out those words, "My Lord, my God." He examined the evidence, and he concluded that the tomb was empty because of a resurrection. And Jesus looked to him and said, "Thomas, you are so lucky, buddy, that you were able to see me for yourself. But more blessed are those who come later," meaning us, "who will believe though they did not get to see." Jesus came on a rescue mission. He came to people he had made who rejected him. And yet, those who received him, who believed in his name, he gave them the right to become children of God. And like Thomas, we get to follow, and with an understanding that faith is the conviction of things not seen. Faith is the conviction of things not seen. What we've seen, what we've tested, has to be enough so that we can trust on the things that we have no other way of knowing. Because we know instinctively that our opinions don't hold water. They can make sense when compared to our own thoughts. We can figure out how things really work, but how things could work, but there's always a missing piece unless we let God supply the whole story. Faith is the conviction of things not seen based on what is seen and verifiable. Doss was incredible. The people that he saved that otherwise would have died if he had not chosen to remain on that ridge, and yet the people that he was going after are the same people who had beaten and mocked him. And 75 people or more were lowered down to safety. And at the end of the movie, if you watch the whole thing, they give testimonies how grateful they are and how wrong they were about that man that they called coward. But Doss remained on the ridge, and he could only look for signs of life. He could not give life to the dead. He could only try to maintain the life for those who still had it, and some of them giving them hope and reason to live. But Jesus was when he went to the ridge, he didn't come looking for signs of life because he was the creator of life. And he did come looking for one more. He came looking for you, wanting to take you, invite you to go with him off the ridge. He's looking for people who understand that apart from God, they're spiritually dead in their own sin. And because in my sins and my transgressions, I was dead, Jesus needed to breathe into me life. Jesus came looking, seeking just one more to breathe into him or her his life, to restore what was lost in war and to claim you as his own. Jesus climbed that ridge on a rescue mission on that hill outside of Jerusalem in order to bring you life and so that you can have it abundantly beyond measure. And he was not just a good man. He was not just a good teacher, because he claimed to be from God. And he could not have taught something that wasn't true and be considered good. But Jesus wasn't just a good man. He was a perfect man, because he lived the only human being to satisfy the righteousness of God in order to give his life in exchange for you and me who haven't. He took the beating of the cross so that he could save those who were crucifying him. What kind of man does that? And he was dead, certifiably dead by the professional medical examiner who, if he was wrong, would have been executed. He was dead in the tomb on Friday, Saturday, and part of Sunday. And on the third day, he rose to life just as he promised. What kind of man makes a prediction, a promise like that, and then carries it out? How can you and I not trust him with all things when he can keep a promise like that? Wow. But when he came out, he didn't just slide out through the ceiling and leave the tomb there, people wondering, anybody home? No, the stone was rolled back, and the soldiers fell as though they were dead. And that borrowed tomb was now had another vacancy. You know, I think the reason the stone was rolled away was he obviously didn't need to get out the way he was carried in. But people needed to see inside. And also, I believe that he wanted to make sure that the vacancy was available for the next person who needed it. And parents, I want you to know, if you ever need this, he made his bed too. You can see in the scriptures, it says he folded his sheets, his burial cloth, and laid them there. I don't know if an angel did that for him, but Jesus' bed was made when he got up. He wasn't in too big, that much of a hurry. So use that if you need it. But the question today, I don't know how much glue is in your seat, but will you let him take you off the ridge? He's come to you. He's whispering your name. And in the last book of the Bible that John wrote, called Revelation, Jesus said, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. And if anyone comes with me, opens the door. If anyone opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me." So Jesus is knocking, he's whispering, he's calling, he's inviting, he's beckoning, he's pleading, he's begging. How can God, who died on the cross for our sin, who lived a completely righteous life to die for the unrighteous, beg us to do anything? I mean, if that were me, I'd say, okay, your choice. But Jesus so wants one more, he so wants you, that he is begging you, please come with me off the ridge. Will you let him? Question you ask, is Jesus authentic? Is Jesus who he claimed to be? The only question you have to answer is, why was the tomb empty? If it makes more sense to you that the tomb was empty for a resurrection than anything else, then say, yeah, he was authentic. He was who he claimed to be. Will you call on him? Will you let him breathe his life into you? Don't keep your mouth closed and say, no, I'm going to live my own life. Open up and let him breathe his life in you. Those of us who are Christ followers, we know and we struggle at the same time with the idea where Paul wrote, I have been crucified with Christ. And it is no longer I who live, but it is Christ who lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and came to rescue me. Let him breathe into you his life. Will you trust Jesus to restore what sin has taken away? Sin is a fight, it's a war, it's a battle, and we are all casualties of it. We all have our own dysfunctions because of it. We all have our own pains and regrets. We all have things in our lives that we wish didn't happen that happened because of sin somewhere, somehow. We live in a fallen world that is stained by sin, and sometimes life is just awful. Last week, we baptized a young woman who at 19 learned that she had cancer, and now at 20. her cancer is no longer responding to the chemo. Last night, there was a young woman who's 30 battling cancer. She was a former math student of mine. There are things that happen that you say, oh, if I were God, I would not let those things happen. And yet, here we are in this fallen world, and what they really do is serve as reminders that life sucks, that sin is awful. And Jesus is not to blame. He is the rescuer. God is not the problem. He's the solution. Satan would have us blame God, saying, hey, if like he said to Jesus, hey, if you're the Son of God, cast yourself down and let the angel save you. Others are looking at Jesus and mocking him, saying, you who saved others, why don't you save yourself? Because we don't understand. He is in the process of saving us, and this is the only way that it's possible. And yet, because of our limited understanding and our finite thinking, we look at him and say, what a fool. And yet, we are the ones who are foolish because we don't understand that he's doing that for us, and there is no other way out of the mud of Okinawa except to go with him off the ridge. Will you identify yourself as his? Christ died for my sins, just as the scripture said. He was buried, and he was raised from the dead on the third day, just as the scripture said. If there are other things that you're struggling with, if you believe this and you can accept this, let this be enough to cover the things that you don't understand. And say, Jesus, yes, I will go off the ridge with you. Jesus, thank you for your presence here today. Thank you for the party that you have set, that you paid such a high price to establish.